Welcome to GovInnovator. I'm Andy Feldman. Jim Shelton, the Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Education, joins us today to talk about how to strengthen the use of evidence in public sector grantmaking and, more broadly, how to build an organizational culture that values data, evidence, and innovation. Here's a clip.
I think the first lesson is a lesson that most leaders know, which is don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You always have to start somewhere. The expertise and the capacity of your team to take on this work needs to be developed over time. The availability of solutions that meet the highest evidence bars will probably be limited early on. And so being willing to think about this in terms of stages, both in terms of time and in terms of the levels of evidence that you want to use in making resource allocation and selection decisions is a pretty important thing.
The Department of Education has made important advances in recent years in evidence-based grantmaking, while also using its grants to spur innovation in education policy and practice. The department's efforts include the launch of the Institute for Education Sciences in 2002, including its What Works Clearinghouse, as well as the launch of the Investing in Innovation, or I3, program in 2010. To tell us about this progress and how other agencies can learn from the department's efforts, we're joined by Jim Shelton, Deputy Secretary of Education, who has been a strong voice for the greater use of evidence to learn and do what works in education. Prior to joining the department, he was a program director for the Education Division of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Jim, welcome.
It's great to be here.
You've put a lot of energy and effort into strengthening the use of evidence in the department's grant-making programs. In your own words, why is that emphasis on evidence so important?
Yeah, as people in either government service or focus on the social sector, we are all trying to do a couple of things. One is to have the most impact on people's lives as possible, trying to change those outcomes to make their lives better, to make communities better, cities better, states and our entire country and the world ultimately better. The second is to make good use of the limited resources that we have in pursuit of that work. What we are trying to do with the evidence work is to ensure the highest probability of doing both of those things. I often say that the best return for taxpayers would be if we could just pay for the outcomes that we want. We pay when we get that outcome. In lieu of being able to do that, because lots of systems won't allow us to work that way, the next best thing is to pay on the probability of an outcome. And that's ultimately what evidence is. It's the probability that you will get the outcome that you're looking for because it's happened and been studied rigorously before.
Jim, you've articulated a vision for what grant-making agencies could look like in the future. And I know that you've worked to move the Department of Education closer to that vision. But the basic idea is that discretionary grants, which are smaller dollars but more flexible, can act as a proving ground where you can test out approaches, learn what works, build evidence of effectiveness, so that you can influence the bigger dollars, the formula funds, and drive larger scale impact. Tell us more about that vision of what public sector grant making could look like.
Sure. One of the things that's really ironic, frankly, about our work in evidence right now is that, take the Department of Education, one of the programs that people have come to associate with this evidence work is the Investing in Innovation Fund, I3. Well, relative to the overall size of the education budget, it's tiny. And so the question becomes, how can we actually drive more of our resources through the lens of things that have a high probability of working? And how can we get the field to start looking for those things and people who produce products or services to actually feel like it's in their interest to have evidence that they work? So what we've tried to do is to create a system where the programs that are competitive, like I3, create a pipeline. And they have a very simple incentive system. You can get a little bit of money if you have a little bit of evidence, and you can get a lot more money if you have a lot of evidence. But more importantly than that is that we hope to be able to create a system where our large formula dollars then can prioritize those things that have evidence, that you get more likely to have large pools of resources available to you through districts and states if, in fact, you have that evidence base. And we can do that through some of our programs should Congress allow it. So we've been trying to work towards that vision. My hope is that we built the basic infrastructure that will let the folks who come after us, both here and on the Hill, take the next steps.
Am I right that you could think of that approach as using the smaller, more flexible discretionary grant dollars as your skunk works in your organization. In other words, it's the part of your organization where you can test out new approaches or validate ones that seem promising and generate strong evidence about what works so that then you can influence the bigger dollar items, in this case, the formula grants.
That's absolutely right. So, I mean, you think about it, when I mentioned before the idea of creating a pipeline, you want to have lots of ideas coming in that may not have much evidence at all, but are showing promising data. You can then vet those and identify those that, under more rigorous scrutiny, make it to the next stage, and then give them more resources to see how they hold up at scale. And then so forth and so on, ultimately weeding out the things that don't work, providing them with feedback so they can improve, and passing on those things that do turn out to work and making them really transparent to the field so the field can use the resources, their own and the ones we provide, to buy those things that work, to spend on those things that work. Any agency can actually do this, and we're seeing other agencies do it in really smart ways. Education has a limited set of things that have rigorous evidence, but in certain areas over on the health side, for example, teen pregnancy, they have a really good research base and evidence base already. And so as opposed to trying to build a pipeline in something like teen pregnancy, they're able to say, look, we've got 12 things with pretty strong evidence that they work. Why don't you choose one that you think meets your context best? And based on your application and choosing one of these things that works and matching it to your context, we will award you funds based on the competitiveness of your application. That's the best of all worlds, and that's where we really love to be, is have lots of options of things that have a strong evidence base that people can choose from based on how well they think it'll fit in their local context.
Jim, tell us a bit more about the progress made at the department so listeners can get a sense of the progression. The emphasis on evidence was kickstarted in the previous administration with the launch of the Institute for Education Sciences, and then it's been ramped up and catalyzed by this administration.
So, I mean, as you said, this work actually started before we arrived. The Institute for Education Sciences, IES, really did a phenomenal job of putting evidence on the map, of saying that rigorous evidence in particular was very important to understanding what works and what doesn't for our students in schools at every level. And building an infrastructure and training people to meet specific standards of evidence, be it the gold standard, the RCT with multiple large-scale evaluations, or the next levels down. So that baseline of saying evidence is important was out there. But what it did is it created a context where you were either gold standard or nothing. And so even though we had what was a great idea, a What Works Clearinghouse, for most educators, it wasn't relevant because it had very, very few things in it. So what we said is there really is an important step that we have to try and make happen here, which is how do we build that pipeline that goes from having very little evidence to having lots of evidence, help the field to see what's in each stage of that, provide incentives to folks to create more evidence, and to use it when they're making decisions on the purchasing side as well. And so what we've been able to do with our variety of programs is to build on that initial base, but say, here's what the spectrum of evidence looks like, reaching all the way back to even some of the early science, which we created common evidence standards with the National Science Foundation, and then bring that forward to how we actually operationalize it in the context of our programs. Now, the reality is that you can have these definitions, but unless you build them into programs in a way that lets people respond to them, that makes resources available based on having this evidence, and frankly, rewarding people for producing more evidence, then you got a lot of great intentions and pretty good definitions, but not a lot to drive people to it. So having these programs that reward evidence and reward doing evaluations is also a critically important part of building the ecosystem for this work to continue. The last thing I'll say is that all of this work takes a set of folks who have deep expertise in understanding what rigor looks like and how you do that in different contexts and how you build evaluations to do that work. And what we found is that those people play important roles both in evaluating the studies that come in to tell us whether or not they actually have met the evidence threshold. They play an important role in providing technical assistance to folks who are trying to build evaluations. In the initial I3 program, we had over 80% of them have rigorous evaluations, at if we had not had technical assistance, we would have been lucky to make half. And so that kind of support and expertise, both within the Institute for Education Sciences, but also out in the field, is an important part of building the infrastructure for this work to continue.
A final question for you, Jim, which is, what's your advice to other agency leaders, whether at the federal level or elsewhere, in terms of leadership strategies that have helped you move the organizational culture towards one that values evidence and data and experimentation?
So I think that I think the first lesson is a lesson that most leaders know, which is, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You always have to start somewhere. The expertise and the capacity of your team to take on this work needs to be developed over time. The availability of solutions that meet the highest evidence bars will probably be limited early on. And so being willing to think about this in terms of stages, both in terms of time and in terms of the levels of evidence that you want to use in making resource allocation and selection decisions, is a pretty important thing. The second thing is, talk about it all the time. The reality is that it makes great common sense to people to invest in what works. Like, that sounds like something you should do. The reality is that the pressures of day-to-day work often cause people to do something else, because it takes time to see whether or not the evidence actually meets the criteria. It takes time to figure out whether the evaluation that they've designed is actually going to produce the kind of evidence that you're looking for. There may be people in your office selling you products that they swear are better than the things that have an evidence base. They just haven't had a chance to evaluate it yet. All of those things that are incentives that go in the opposite direction of using the evidence base to make decisions and allocate resources. And if you're not talking about the importance of moving the entire enterprise in the direction of making evidence matter, then it gets really easy for people to forget and make decisions that are easier on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately, as every leader knows, is how you lose the battle of changing culture.
We'll end this portion of the interview here, but the conversation will continue. I'm going to ask Jim Shelton to talk about some of the specific types of incentives used to encourage grantees to build and use evidence, and I'll post his answer to the blog. But for now, Jim, I know that your time at the department is soon coming to a close, and I want to congratulate you for all the important progress that you helped bring about, and thanks for sharing some of your insights with us today.
Glad to do it.